later on today's episode.
However, instead, he actually ended up devising a plan to overthrow the queen to take over the entire kingdom. And he succeeded and had his wife murdered. However, it is believed that she haunted and terrorized this man and the kingdom and everybody who helped him for years after his passing. So, as a result, believers of Nyabingi would start, they're calling it cult or religion, whichever is more respectful, and provide sanctuary for many people who are targeted by the regime. But to keep her spirit maintained through manifestations exclusively within further generations of women within the region, Nyabingi priestesses, or Bariquas, I believe is what it's called, follow processes to induct their daughters as early as possible to prevent any non-inducted women from becoming the next personification of the Nyabingi spirit.
Oh.
I'm going to pause there because I know that was a lot.
It's a lot to unpack, so let me make sure I understand. So, as soon as they came.
Hello, this is Patrice. Thank you for clicking on this episode. Here at the Melanated Intellects podcast, we talk about everything from Black mental health and personal growth to Black world history.
And my name is Shayla. Here you will find a balance between topics everyone is talking about and topics no one is talking about. Either way, we guarantee we will be bringing our distinct intellectual perspective. Hey, 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 welcome back and happy Black History Month. So thanks so much for clicking on this episode and tuning in. I hope that you heard part one. So this is a continuation of that conversation. This year for Black History Month, we are focusing on Black women warriors of a wide diversity, I think. And in part one, we put some disclaimers out there. So just to recap, you know, we do our best. A lot of our history, sometimes there are discrepancies. And if we find that, we'll speak on that. So in part one, we spoke about some discrepancies and things like that in history on, you know, we wasn't there. Okay, right. But, you know, some sources will say one thing, some will say another. As always, we will put our sources, as many as we can fit, because sometimes Black History Month gets to be a lot. But as many of the sources as we can fit, we will put the links in our description. Bear with us as we pronounce names and things of that nature to the best of our ability. Please provide grace. And I think that pretty much sums it up. So we left off with Queen of Sheba. So if you
did not hear legs.
And her hairy legs. Yes. So if you did not hear that, then you want to go ahead and go back and look. So I think we've wrapped up Queen of Sheba. So now we're going to move on here to some other warriors that we want to highlight. Okay. Patrice, did you have anything to say before I get started?
No, ma'am. Let's get into it.
Okay, so let's talk about, I feel like we do know, we are familiar with these group of ladies because I feel like they've come up and been inspired by current day movies and things of that nature, which are the Dahomey Amazons. So they're both inspired by characters in Black Panther, right? The Dora Milaje, of course, we know the all-female army in Black Panther. And then also Woman King also has connections to Dahomey, right? So I feel like we do kind of know, but just in case we don't know, we're still going to highlight them. They're a fierce all-female army that was so ruthless, the European colonists called them Amazons. So they put sort of the term Amazons on them. And that term Amazon is, according to my source, the term Amazon is originally from Greek mythology. Okay. This comes from a BBC article that we'll have in there. So if that's not true, you know, something else, just, message us on IG.
Just, you know, then you know the okay. truth.
Yeah. Then you know the truth. Just send it to us. And then that way we have it. That's all. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they were frontline soldiers, in the army of the Kingdom of Dahomey, a West African empire that existed from 1625 to 1894. And really, when you think about it, which I guess I'll get to this a little later in one of the articles to bring it up to kind of current day, but really, when you think about it, kind of not that long ago, like 1894, relatively in speaking about time, because in the first episode, we were like in BC, right? Queen of Sheba, right? Mm-hmm. But that really kind of wasn't that long ago, just to put that into perspective as far as time.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, it's remnants in modern day Benin, which occupies a sliver of coast right there between Nigeria and Togo. Okay. They were conquering neighboring tribes or resisting European forces, the Amazons were just known to be fearless. In one battle against the French in 1892, before the kingdom became a French colony, it is said only 17 of 434 Amazons came back alive. According to legend, and I may be mispronouncing her wrong, so I am sorry, Queen Hangbe, I believe is how you pronounce her name, was the founder of the Amazons. Now, this is just legend, and I'll hop to that in a minute why it's just legend. But she assumed the throne in the early 18th century after the sudden death of her twin brother. Now, her other brother, she had another brother that kind of like overthrew her. He believed that women should not rule and erased a lot of her history, so much so that there's discrepancy on if she ever existed or not. So that's saddens me. Historians question that she existed. So that's why I said alleged, or I say according to legend. That's what I say, according to legend. Her legacy, however, does live on in the mighty female soldiers. The most widely accepted theory about the female soldiers is that they served as bodyguards to the queen and kings who came after her. I'm sorry if I mispronounced, but King, I believe it's pronounced Gezo, who ruled from 1818 to 1858, is who officially integrated the Amazons into the army. Now, that's important because at that point in time, they were low on manpower because the slave trade was really in full effect. So this was a big deal for him to integrate them. So they weren't a separate, the Dahomey Amazons wasn't a separate entity. They were into, you know, the traditional army. So the recognition of the Amazons as official soldiers of Dahomey strengthened a duality. And I thought this part was interesting, that was already embedded in the society through the kingdom's religion, which has since developed into, I believe it's pronounced Vodun, now one of Benin's official religions and basis of voodoo. An integral legend told of, I believe it's pronounced Maulisa, a male and female integral God who came together to create the universe. In all institutions, political, religious, and military, men would have a female equivalent. However, the king reigns supreme. So my interpretation of that, or what I took that to mean, is that religiously, it was just really important for there to be male and female duality or equality. And this king bringing those two groups together in that way meant that. Historical acts of the Amazons are unreliable, right? Because I talked about how he pretty much erased the queen's history. So I'm sure with that history, he had to probably erase some of the history of the Amazons. However, several slave traders, missionaries, and colonists recorded their encounters with the fearless women. So in 1861, an Italian priest described an army exercise where thousands of women scaled a 120-meter high thorny wall without a whimper. In 1889, a French administrator describes witnessing one young Amazon approach a captive as part of her training. He claims that he saw her walk up, swing her sword three times with both hands, then calmly cut the last flesh that attached the head to the trunk. She then squeezed the blood off her weapon and swallowed it. So this is according to him. So something happened because people got real. They saying it like they was there, like they seen it happen, like they watched it go down. You know what I'm saying? So also, I wanted to reference, there was another article that kind of talked about their role in society after they retired. And so after retirement, they still played a role in society and just standing up and kind of challenging the norms. And there's a professor who grew up near a training camp that they had there for the Dahomey Amazon. He talks about a woman who his aunt used to look after. And that's why I mentioned earlier that theoretically it wasn't that long ago, because what did I say? 1894? Is that what I said? 1890s. I don't remember. Yeah. They ran from 1625 to 1894. And then I talked about how in 1892, where the Frenchmen noticed them scaling the wall. So, I mean, just think about time frame wise here. You know, some of these women were very young, right, when they started their journey as an Amazon. So I don't know, even if you just say 1970, 1980, they would have been in their 80s. 90s maybe, you know, depending on when they were born. So anyway, he talks about how his aunt helped look after this elderly Amazon and how she just challenged the status quo in their small town. And he saw that inspire other women in the town, including women in his family. So shout out to the homie Amazons that, in my opinion, it really wasn't that long ago. You know, we talking about...
I was born less than 100 years from then.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. She was still, I mean, this particular woman, you know, I don't know, but.
Well, I was referencing 1894.
Correct. Yeah. But I just mean like this particular woman or a woman in that type of environment could have still been alive, you know, really when we were alive, mm-hmm. we could have crossed, we could have been alive at the same time. So I just always like to put that in there because, you know. People like to act like stuff was a long time ago and all of that. And when you really start doing the math and think about, you know, people's influence on other people, whether that be generationally or, you know, however, and to know that this person was alive when this person was alive. I don't know. I just feel like it puts it into perspective for us because they'll have you think our history was a long time ago and it really wasn't. So,
It's interesting because that the priest of 1861 that talks about seeing thousands of women scale a thorny acacia bush. There is a scene in Woman King where the training, if I remember correctly, is on a thorny ass bush or climbing through it under or something like that, if I remember correctly. And I don't think the whole swordsmanship, that scene, I don't remember that taking place, but it's just cool. It kind of gave me back some flashbacks and that maybe this was probably that explains those scenes and may have been inspired by those accounts of the trainings that they went through. I've talked about Mawulisa several times. It's like, to me, it was the first yin and yang when it comes to spirituality and balance and, you know, feminine, masculine energy and things of that nature. So, you know, knowing this in-depth level of the origin, because I knew it was something relative to Benin religion and politics and even voodoo, but I didn't know that it was directly correlated with the Kingdom of Dahomey. So I really love that connection, actually, and how something like that can create the spirit and change in perspective for the society. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty fire. Yeah. Because you have on one end a woman being killed because women shouldn't lead. And on the other end, it becomes like a social norm that moving forward, there will always be balance. That's fire.
Yeah.
That's fire.
Yeah. I agree. And I think it's a good reminder, if I'm being honest. Because sometimes I feel like current day, sometimes it feels more separated by male and female today than some previous times in the past. I guess I can't say any other, but definitely more than
lifetime.
Yeah, for sure. It just feels more male-female separation, particularly within the Black community. And I hate that for us. I really do. So, I mean, I won't go down that road, but yeah, I
hate that. We can always do so much more separation in numbers than we can alone.
Very true. Very true. And that equality is important and that balance is important. And yes. We just both need to be able to exist. And anyway, I'll leave it at that.
For some reason, it's not allowed. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. So let's not get on that. So, yeah. Love that. Love that story. Woman King was a powerful film. I can't say enough. If you have not seen it, definitely go and see it.
I have not. I have not seen it. And I feel like I might have.
She put herself out there. I was just going to stare at it through the screen.
No,
y'all can't see that.
Look, you know, I take accountability. Started the film, you know, a while ago, several months ago.
A long time ago. Yeah,
several months ago. And I think I'm maybe 15 or 20 minutes in. And then I don't know. I had to go somewhere. So I don't know. Something happened. I don't recall what. And then I never got back to it. That's not an excuse. That's just what happened. I take accountability.
You know, it's Black History Month. Maybe this, I know you have to be in the right mindset for some films like that. I'm not saying you specifically, but in general, maybe it's Black History Month. Maybe we can revisit.
You know, and if for some reason I don't, right after Love Jones, we'll watch Woman King when I come to Charlotte. You know what I mean? I just feel like get the popcorn, get the wine, let's get comfy. You know, I have a beautiful new couch. We'll hang out. Turn on the movie one after another. All the movies I have not watched that Patrice want me to watch. Like, let's just go movie marathon. You know, movie marathon.
You see what she's doing? Y'all see? Y'all my witness. Y'all are my witness. How she looping me into her homework assignment.
I'm just saying. Okay.
Whatever.
I may watch it before then, but if I don't, then you know.
I don't believe you. Well, I'll know. You'll tell me. So
yeah. I went back and watched, this movie had been out a long time. I think it was called American Skin. Is that the one where he's in a prison?
Wait, prison?
I'm sorry, not prison. He's in the police station.
Police station. Yes. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah. So that one, long time I went without seeing that. And then I just finally, you know, like, look, you gotta woman up and do it. You know what I'm saying?
How recent was that?
It's been a while. I feel like last year. Being a new year. Okay. But I feel like February. Roughly a year ago. How about that? 10 months, a year ago, something like that.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So, but I was definitely late. Like, you know, it came out a minute ago.
Just don't do what I did. I will never forget the trauma I caused myself.
Oh yeah,
watching American Skin and The Black Messiah back to back. Oh my gosh.
Don't do that.
Up for a good week. Like, I mean, I was staring at blank walls. Like, it was so bad. Oh, crying, snotting, sliding down the wall. Don't do it.
Oh my goodness.
Don't do it. Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Powerful films, both.
Mm-hmm. Black Panther, yeah. Also very powerful. So I've seen all of them. So
okay, I will say I have not seen the second one.
Dang! Wait a minute! Are you coming for me? And you ain't see the second one?
I couldn't. I wasn't ready yet.
Oh, because
I wasn't ready. You know, I get real emotional and shit.
They addressed it very well because I'm not a big fan of like you replacing an actor or like you acting like I clearly see that ain't somebody else and POC. You know what I'm saying? Like stuff like that bothers me. I see you. You know what I'm saying? Stuff like that bothers me. So I feel like they handled it the best way they could.
I heard really good. They handled it very well. Like I heard all the powerful, even the trailer fucks me up. Like I could not handle going to see it. And then I told myself that once I got all set up and everything in Charlotte, then I would do it. But I keep creating more goals, which tells me I'm just not ready. I haven't been able to watch a Chadwick Boseman film since he's been gone. It's just, I watched his movies. Like I watched Black Panther in theaters 8 times.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's commitment.
So, I am going to watch it soon though. But yeah.
You know what? Don't toss it on the list. We do that with look. Love Jones, Woman King, Black Panther 2.
I'm a marathon queen. You ain't gonna want to sit through my marathons. I'm gonna start the first one, then the second one.
Oh girl. I never told you about my marathons. You know, girl.
Okay.
All right. And you know what? I really don't have anybody to do it because Cartier be giving me a hard time. And I don't understand why. Like, I want the theme. I want the food to be, I want black food. I want us to have on black pajamas. I want us to be locked up in the house for 2 days. Let's go. We're going to take potty breaks. We're going to refuel back up and then we're going to head back into this.
Yes.
That's what I want. No one else. I didn't know that. Why we never talked about this? I'm very passionate. Cartier talked to me.
I told you about my like Fast and Furious marathon. I'm a marathon queen. I'm a marathon something.
I don't think I realized you were watching them in succession like that in the, you know what I mean? Like, I thought you were watching over a course of a week or so, but Cartier is like, your husband's going to have to love a movie marathon. I said, you got that right.
Yes.
If you don't come over, you don't even ask me for my number. If you don't like a movie marathon, if you're not willing to put on the silly pajama that matches my food, don't come this way. You can't, there's nothing to talk about.
It's a theme. I'm locked in the home and the marathon. Girl, you know what? I just, my most recent marathon was a Harry Potter marathon.
We did Harry Potter. We did a Harry Potter one. Oh my gosh. Why have we never talked about this?
I don't know, but I did a full Harry Potter marathon. I think it was like the last week. It was when I was off from work. So the last week of December, a full Harry Potter marathon.
And we started with Fantastical Beast. Then we did Harry Potter next. You want to do that. You want to line them up like that. Because sometimes you catch things that you know, reach over into the, that's what it's called, right? The Harry Potter spinoff, Fantastical Beasts.
Yeah, I think it's, yes. And you know, I haven't even seen it. Okay, we're so off topic.
You gotta check that out because you get a little bit of tea about Dumbledore. Okay, we're getting off track.
What?
Yeah, there's Dumbledore tea. And I think there's three of those, two or three.
There are. I know. So I was like, okay, I need to do that next because I'm still on my Harry Potter high. You know, I spent the whole week in those.
I like it in chronological order, so I wanted to do those first, then Harry Potter, even though I've seen and read all the books. But anyway. Okay, let's get back here.
Yeah, I'm a marathon queen.
I didn't know we had that in common.
Yes, ma'am. 1,000%. Okay, sorry, y'all. Squirrel. Are we done? Are we moving on?
I'm good. I've said all that I have to say for right now about the Tahomey Amazons. That does not mean there's no more history to discuss. It just means we've scratched the surface and that's what I have.
Okay. We're kicking it back to me.
Yeah, kicking it back to you because we're going to head over to Rwanda.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me go ahead and ask for a lot of grace. Of all of the stories I've told in this series, this is one of my favorites, and you'll be able to tell because I go into quite a bit of detail. But I also cannot say this lady's name. I do have a lisp. And I'm going to say it first, the full name, but then I'm going to reference it as Queen M to keep from continuing to disrespect this lady's name. Fair. And so for people who feel like me saying Queen M is disrespectful, I am sorry in advance because I'm in my mind feeling like saying it wrong is disrespectful. So we're on opposite ends. I'm sorry. I'm doing my best and I can only do so well. Okay. But I love this story, so I can't wait to tell it. So I'm about to get into it. Okay. What I love about the story is that there is a strong overlap between actually two queens. Okay. Mm. So, Queen Muhumuza of Rwanda. Mm-hmm. This is her story. She is also heavily influenced by the religion of Nyabingi. Nyabingi is also a queen. So, let's get into the tea. Okay. So, Nyabingi's religion cult came centuries before Queen M's time, okay, and was one of the several prominent religions in the Kigezi district of Uganda in pre-colonial Africa. Okay. So, Queen M, her reign is from like 1850 to 1950, but I'm going to take a second and take us back to Queen Nyabingi, which was in the 1700s, where she reigned over a large part of a kingdom of what is now considered Tanzania, okay?
Okay.
So Queen Nyabingi married Ruhinda, a chief of Mpororo, I said that name too, but that's the last time I'm going to say it, kingdom, which spanned what is now Southwest Uganda. So Ruhinda still remained in Karagwe in Southwest Uganda. However, instead, he actually ended up devising a plan to overthrow the queen to take over the entire kingdom. And he succeeded and had his wife murdered. However, it is believed that she haunted and terrorized this man and the kingdom and everybody who helped him for years after his passing. So as a result, believers of Naya Bingi would start, they're calling it cult or religion, whichever is more respectful, and provide sanctuary for many people who are targeted by the regime. But to keep her spirit maintained through manifestations exclusively within further generations of women within the region, Naya Bingi priestesses or Bariquas, I believe is what it's called, follow processes to induct their daughters as early as possible to prevent any non-inducted women from becoming the next personification of the Naya Bingi spirit. I'm going to pause there because I know that was a lot.
It's a lot to unpack. So let me make sure I understand. So yes. As soon as they can, early age, they take their daughters, kind of welcome them into this religion because when I'm reading between the lines is, help me if I got it wrong, they're assuming or hoping that her spirit will come back. And they want to make sure, maybe I'm not, I don't know. They want to make sure that she's inducted into this religion when she come back.
So yes, like basically a large, yes in context, but they are believing that she is possessing bodies continuously.
Possessing bodies continuously. Yes,
so a large number of eligible women who would be ready to inherit the spirit once its former owner died to ensure the work of the queen Naya Bingi could be continued.
Wow.
So this continues on. So if you think about the 1700s up until Queen M starts her reign in 1850 is her lifespan. So if you think about that, okay, we are now the kingdom, going back to the actual kingdom, which is now Ruhinda, and you know, through his power, Europeans are also able to start to infiltrate the kingdom as well. So the kingdom becomes aware of Naya Bingi's growing following and starts ordering suspected heirs of her spirit to be targeted and murdered to negate any powerful rebellious forces from arising. Imagine being afraid of a spirit to that extent. Where your order, it's not like you thinking, oh, that's just some crazy people on the mountains. They think she's still around, you know what I'm saying? Whatever. All the people who worship Tupac today, you know what I'm saying? Things like that. No, they believe this is legit powerful. We need to take these folks out. Keep cutting the heads off because, and another one keeps growing back. So they keep chopping the heads off of this queen to keep the following from becoming too powerful. That's crazy.
Well, I'm thinking, I don't know if it's necessarily their belief that she is here, is coming back, or is among us, as it is so much of like these people strongly believe it. And with that belief, they could rise up, cause a problem, be an issue, whatever. So, I mean, she obviously has a very powerful following, which, I mean, I guess they didn't know that at this time, but it will span hundreds of years. So then they should have been concerned.
True. But I do also think that the fact that she haunted their asses also helped.
Yeah, that's real. Facts.
We started there, you know?
Yeah, that's
real. She said, I'm going to get your ass and all your friends, too.
Yeah.
but so between the time that Naya Bingi's death and the rise of the following to the time of, you know, the rise of Queen M and her rise to becoming a huge, overseeing a huge... what am I trying to say here? Goodness gracious, my notes. I'm trying to follow and also speak freely, y'all. Bear with me. Let me re-record that. Okay. So between the time that Naya Bingi's death and the rise of the overall following, to the time and rise of Queen M and the rise of this religion, it became huge. And in response to the Tutsi rule in Rwanda and its territories, and many of the followers were people who were actually in the mountains. These were peasants, people who were also seeking social change. So you're talking about hundreds of people who are like, I want change, and they're following her. And this is all while in the background, Queen M is starting to gain her rule. So shifting into Queen M's story, she is at this point the widow of Kigeri, I'm not going Roman rules, I believe this is the fifth, Arabu Giri of the Mwami Kingdom in Rwanda towards the end of the 19th century. So Arabu Giri is known for his power and the first to come into contact with Europeans. He was, however, betrayed. And here's a discrepancy because I read this through different articles. He was betrayed by either his stepmother, his other wife, or his stepmother's son. One of them wanted him dead to overthrow him and take over the kingdom and worked with Europeans to assassinate him. And as a result, his stepmother's son did become, Musinga, did become the king. So whether it's his mama, his one of his wives, or Musinga himself, they all, something happened and Musinga became the king. Okay. And so he takes over the king, and with that enters European control as well. This will lead to years of instability between the Tutsi and Hutu people, and later the Rwandan genocide almost two centuries later in 1994. Queen M and her son will be exiled into the mountains where they would encounter the Nyambingi followers. They originally were not received well because they were former royal people, but they quickly learned to live with the people. And with exposure to the Nyambingi teachings, she rose to be also a woman in line to receive the spirit.
Oh, so wait, she was not a part of the Nyambingi religion until she was exiled.
Until she was exiled. Oh. They exiled her to the wrong mountain. Okay. Oh, she encounters these followers. Yes. This is kind of where truly her individual story really takes place. You know, she's separate from being a wife, a queen. She is like now a ruler at some point and building her own following. Because as she continues to navigate this space, you know, she gains full leadership as a result of her character, intelligence, and her charisma. And she was revered as a reincarnation of Nyambingi herself.
Ooh. That's strong.
Yes. Yes. This gave her the political and religious following she needed to go after the kingdom. And so as a result of her growing hostility towards European colonialists, she was arrested and jailed in 1908 by Germans and collaborating Rwandan forces for 2 years. Once she was released, she continued to go after the government and eventually founded her own kingdom. In 1911, she launched her last attack on the Anglo-Belgian-Germany Boundary Commission, mouthful. They responded by killing 40 of her followers and deported her and her son to Mengo, where she died in 1945. The colonial response to her followers was the Witchcraft Act of 1912. The British were so fearful of the beliefs of the Nyambingi and the political power it provided the struggle, they would, however, continue on a large scale as far as like struggling with these people and getting them to bring back order until 1928, when the last uprising was led by a man named Ndongutsi, and he and his army was arrested and kept captive.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. That's a lot of history to unpack. Yeah.
Yes.
And intertwine.
Yes. It's such a fascinating story.
And really not that long ago. You said she died in when? 1940 what?
1945. My nana was born
in 1945.
Yeah, my nana was born probably 4 years later. No, my dad was. No.
I think my grandmother, let me think about this. My grandmother and grandfather on my father's side was definitely alive. And my grandmother on my mother's side would have been alive, but only she would have been a baby, 1 year old or 2 years old, something like that. So, like, you got to do that math, you know, because they love to be like, oh, yeah, this was forever ago. This was a long time ago. It wasn't.
Nana was born already. She was five.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Wow. So crazy. So, and I mean, if you don't know, that's okay. So is the Nyabingi religion still around today?
That's a great question. I actually don't know. I would assume so because of how recent that was.
Yeah, I would assume so as well.
I would actually hope so, to be real with you. And I think there's even a statue. I think she got a statue too. I'm going to look it up. All right. It's either she or Queen M did.
Okay.
One or the other.
And I also feel like, so we talked about... Rwanda in 100 years of Black history. I don't know. I don't think we took the history back that far though. Right.
No.
Cause we went over 100 years, you know, we had a lot of content to cover very similar, you know, cause it was a Black History Month. I think it was a 4-part series. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we took it back that far, but definitely the fighting that was happening between those two tribes had been going on a long time by the time the 90s came around and, you know, Rwanda mm-hmm. known in the movie Hotel Rwanda and all the things. So to have the history go back that far and to understand where it came from originally, I think is interesting because I don't think we went back that. I didn't go back that far.
No, we didn't. You know, we research. Didn't. But like, imagine going to somebody else's spot and saying, y'all got to stop praying and doing what you do over here. Y'all actually enacted an act, a law that says, and I have it here, marking a pivotal moment, despite lacking a clear definition of witchcraft, the law criminalized those who pretended to possess supernatural powers using such pretension to harm others or property. This day shit. You're a guest, friend.
You know, that's how religion is.
That's crazy.
You know what I mean? Coming in, forcing your religion upon other people. Or in this case, it was like, I don't really care what religion you is as long as you're not that one.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yes. It was less about religious freedom and more about this very specific religion that we are afraid of. So
it was. That's very true. Yeah. He's like, y'all problem.
Yeah.
Man, like that was a whole ride though. They need to turn that into a movie.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. I think that's mm-hmm. very interesting. All the way back to the original, yep. you know, woman, her story, you know what I mean? Queen mm-hmm. Nyabingi, right? And then
mm-hmm.
so on and so forth. Yeah, very interesting, yeah. I think.
Especially because it feeds into the Rwanda genocide.
Yes. It's definitely pre-genocide, but it's like pre-genocide.
Yeah.
Like setting the foundation for what will be, you know, to come, for what we know Rwanda to be remembered for today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. So, yeah. And I also want to correct myself. I think I said in the First Kingdom for Nyabingi that when she was murdered, that European rule stepped in. That is not true. European rule only stepped in with Queen M's kingdom. So I do apologize. I spoke incorrectly on that one, but I was just taken aback by this. And the fact that like they were, it low key gave, this is such a reach, but I can't help it. You remember when we were reviewing, The Incredible Life of Rosa Parks mm-hmm. and they talked about the bus boycotts and how it took like 3 years to prepare for and plan for, and it was actually all planned and strategized. That's what it feels like, because they kept women ready for this spirit, for in the case that they would be ready to overthrow the kingdom. Like they kept working and continuing to prepare women, you know, to receive Nyabingi's spirit. That's what it felt like, you know. That was, I don't know.
I can understand that connection. And then for me, and I did this in part one of this series, but Queen Njinga story, yeah. She was also exiled, and she also had to become kind of like kind of integrated into a new group, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. get that figured out so that she could do what she needed to do for her people, you know, slightly mm-hmm. different, in a different way, but I definitely think that that's there, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that presence is there.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting how the spirituality piece also carries these movements, in these rebellions and uproars. And like very light honorable mention is like Erzili Dantor. We couldn't find very much details on this spirit, if for lack of better words, but like this is one of the, how would you describe this one? We were talking about it earlier. I don't know how we would describe it, but basically it was like a spirit leader that also plagued the, I shouldn't say plagued, but also influenced the Haitian Revolution and received offering through the Haitian Revolution. So like there was a couple seasons back we went over the Haitian Revolution and yeah. we talked about a lot of the practices spiritually that plagued that rebellion. Mm-hmm. I got to stop saying plague, that inspired that rebellion. Mm-hmm. And I was doing my research and found that Erzili Dantor was the receiving spirit for that uproar. You know what I'm saying?
Oh.
So yeah. It's just so interesting how like it, how they always coincide one way or another when it comes to the African spirituality with these movements and like the, from the sacrifices to the religions and the spiritual, you know, practices. It just, yeah, it's just very fascinating. It's interesting because in our world, it's all Christianity. That's what we know when it comes to a lot of these wars that we've heard over the years. Or just, you know, it's not a fight over religion at all when you talk about American wars. But yeah, it's real. It's cool.
Yeah, and then also in that Haitian Revolution episode, which I think was season two, don't quote me on that. I think it was, it's not Black History Month for sure, I know. In any way, you gave some history about voodoo there in that episode as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it did play a really, a really pivotal role because religion was, I mean, and still is, but was used in a way to be able to collaborate and communicate. Mm-hmm. And in that particular instance, it was like, yeah, we meeting to go to this religious, you know, ceremony or what might we might consider to be an equivalent of quote unquote church. And then really we are strategizing on how we gonna take over whatever, right? And so his story was really interesting. I can't think of his name right now, but his story was really interesting because also a strategist. I mean, a serious war strategist. So in part one, I talked about, we went over, I think I said it for, I mean, I could say it for any of them, but I think I was talking about Queen Imani Reynis and I talked about her being a strategist. And so anyway, strategy, war strategy is serious. And it's nothing to be minimized because your numbers might be down, your resources might be down, but you can outthink your opponent. That's a different ball game.
And you know what's also interesting with the Haitian Revolution too is that these are people who came from different tribes. They did not speak the same language.
Yes, that was so true.
The spirituality that truly united them because they did not speak the same language.
And got it figured out. Definitely got it figured out. So right. Mm-hmm. And I also think in that story, I mean, I'm not putting into perspective time frames here. So, you know, keep that in mind. I don't want to misspeak because I don't have that information up in front of me. But I feel like in that setting for the Haitian Revolution, it was very like, oh, that's just they were a little religion. You know what I'm saying? Minimized, you know, in this context in which we're talking about now, it was like, oh, hold on, wait a minute. Because they're not playing around about their religion. There's religion going to be a problem for us. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. That's just an interesting difference here. Because you can believe what you believe, but I respect what other people believe because people's beliefs impact how they show up in the world. It impacts their behavior and it definitely impacts how they deal with you. So whether you believe it or not, they believe it. And that's enough for you to be able to take note of when you're talking about an opponent.
Yep. 1,000%. 1,000%. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember it kind of takes me back to Queen Njinga, like when she was starting to take on kingdoms and like stage her rebellions and like block trades for the Atlantic slave trade and manage and like block the routes. Like that was also a point where she had gone through some sacrificial rituals and married into what is known for,
it was that tribe.
That
was real wild.
They were believed to possibly been cannibalists, and like practice was somewhat even, I don't want to say they practiced voodoo because it didn't outright say that, but the way it portrays them in the documentary is similar to how you have seen voodoo portrayed in the past, voodoo or hoodoo. So I'm like, they're covered in blood and very dark and ghostly type makeup, if you will, and their skulls, and they're dressed in black, gray, white, and red, you know? One would look at them and perceive it's some dark shit. Okay. So when she crosses into that, marries into that, army, for lack of better words, you know, she really takes on a lot of power at that point. And it's just, you know, I feel like one thing these women often go through is the continuous, overlap with power and religion and spirituality and, you know, the different belief systems. And there's a lot of beliefs in Africa, a lot at that time, you know. Yeah, this is sure. Pre-colonial. So it's not all Christianity. I think in some northern parts, it may have been Muslim at that point in time. Cause I think Muslim, I think their influences were like literally hundreds of years before the Atlantic slave. Let me not try to throw out numbers because I can't remember exact details, but it was before colonialism. This is pre-colonial Africa. So it's literally the rawest, purest, found it as is version of Africa that we are familiar with. So, you know, there's a lot of beliefs, a lot of practices to consider. And, you know, imagine trying to communicate and also unite these different tribes that have these different value systems and different belief systems. Even something as small as, like, I think she was, what was it that she carried? Was it a bell?
It was, yeah, it was kind of like a staff. You're right. It was a bell. Was it a bell? I don't know if it was a staff or a bell or a staff that had a bell on it, because there is a reference.
It was something small and gold. It wasn't very big, but she carried it. And like when she was at a point where she needed to be received by this king of this darker army, first thing he did was make her put it down. And he knew that it was as a result, because he knew she was carrying it because she was a woman king. You know, this was her authority. This was her symbol of power. He made her put it down on the ground. That was the first thing he told her, was get rid of it. Like things like that, like, you know, in different tribes and different belief systems. Like, can you imagine, like, you got to know your shit, you know, with who you're dealing with. Knowing your opponent is truly knowing your opponent, because they have different belief systems, completely different from what you do. And also possibly even different languages.
Yeah. And I think something that kind of rings true to all of these women that we've discussed on the series is their sacrifice, the sacrifices that they made for their people. Right. So when we talk about Queen Njinga, you know, they talked a lot about her strategy, but she became whoever she needed to be for her people. Mm-hmm. And if that meant adapting to your religion or fake adapting to your religion, then that's what she was going to do. And she did it more than once. In order to do what she needed to do for her people. And then you were talking about the other queen, where there was the loss of her son.
Yes,
right.
So there's
sacrifice that needs to be had. You know,
Queen Njinga, she also killed her son too.
Her brother killed her son. Yeah. So I don't know if that was a sacrifice she knew she was really giving up. But yeah, her brother.
Don't remember she got married. She got married after she had sent her son to train with
her. She killed her nephew.
That's what it was.
Yeah, she killed her nephew. But her son was already.
Yeah, that's right. That's why she was upset, because he killed her son. Mm-hmm. That's right. You're right. My bad.
I hope they continue, you know. Any of these stories could definitely be turned into movies, but I hope that the African Queens series continues to highlight queens. Yeah. I hope some of the queens that we've talked about here, because I think their stories are interesting.
Absolutely. Like I was just in awe at these stories. Like, how am I going to spend just so much time on one? Because we low-key could talk about each of them for a good full episode if we really wanted to.
Yeah, and just similar to last year when we did Black History Month, we split it up into four different continents, one of them being Australia. And then I told you guys, like, I think we're going to circle back around because the history there is vast. So we did. We did it. It's not Black History Month for Australia earlier this season. I can see something similar happening when it comes to Black women warriors or just Black queens in general, even if they were not, quote unquote, warriors, because there's a lot of history here to unpack. And, you know, the stories, especially once you start like overlapping and putting things and lining it up with the timeline and all the things. So, you know, that's something to think about or kind of be on the lookout for. We might circle back around to some of these stories or some of the stories that we just didn't even get to.
Because we had a list.
A strong list.
Yeah, and so. We had to narrow it down. So there was a lot of removals. Yeah, and some very good stories that could have also occupied some space too, and more episodes for sure. So,
something to think about.
Yeah, so. This is one of my favorite chapters of Melanated Intellects is when we go through Black history like this,
right?
Especially the stories that are not told. Like, I feel like oftentimes when we talk about Black history, we spend so much time in the dark world of slavery. And don't get me wrong, that history needs to be told, amplified continuously, because reality is people are still trying to say it never happened or wasn't that bad. There's always somebody on the other side trying to say that, oh, but we introduced you to civilization or some shit like that. So I do think that our story should always continue to be told, but that's not our only chapter. There is a whole pre-colonial world that existed before, you know, that's not where the Black experience started. It didn't start as slavery. You know, these were amazing, thriving kingdoms and powerful individuals with society structures, belief systems, practices, rituals that go back to the beginning of time, literally. So this story also needs to be told and said and highlighted, admired, all the things as well.
Yeah, Black History Month is always special to us. You know, we take some time, and sometimes we have an idea about Black History Month next year, like a whole year in advance for what we think we might want to do series wise. And I think this shows by the amount of people that listen to our Black History Month episodes. But, you know, we really try to take a unique or different approach, and that's no shade at all to the history that is common, right? The MLKs, even the Rosa Parks and the Malcolm X's, we'll revisit those too, but maybe from a fresh or different perspective. So the history that we know, it's nothing wrong with that. But I also think this is a great opportunity to highlight history that we don't know, or we don't know as much about, or like we heard, but maybe we didn't, you know, dive as deep. Especially as African Americans, just because I just feel like we get what I would describe now as cookie cutter Black history. And our history is, like you said, very vast and diverse and spans all across the world. I mean, we did it in four different continents last year. And that was excluding North America and Africa, by the way. So you know what I mean, that history can be and is very vast. And so I think I just think it's important for us to have a diverse and wider view of our history and the way that it crosses over and does all sorts of things. And it's really cool and interesting. I mean, we've talked about Asia, we've talked about Russia, we've talked about 100
years of Black history. Like, remember, I will never forget that when we had the revelation that all these continents and countries and just they all had a Jim Crow and also went through a civil rights era at the same time. I will never forget that moment when we realized that. And
yeah, the 60s was a really big time
for everybody,
for everyone in the Black diaspora. There's not one place we talked about that didn't have something monumental happening during that time. It was just a time of change and revolution. And 100 years of Black history is interesting because rarely, I don't know, I just feel like when we talk about history here in America, no matter what kind of history it is, it's very linear. And rarely do we line history up. right? On like, yes. Okay, this is the year. What was happening here? But also what was happening in Africa? What was happening here? You know, what was happening, I don't know, in any place in the world, and kind of put that into perspective. And I also feel like we did that when we touched on some history in Brazil. So Black History Month, we did focus on South America, and Brazil was one of the countries we talked about. But then also like season one, I think it was, we touched on, we highlighted, it was, we did a man, we did men and women. So I don't remember if it was a man or a woman we touched
yes,
on.
Yes, we did. Yes, I think it's Mexico, right?
I don't know. We touched on Brazilian history, so I don't know. You did do a man who was of Mexican history, but I touched on because it was also a Melanated Monday, right? So
yeah,
especially
yeah,
at that yeah. time, we had a lot of Brazilian listeners. So anyway, we yeah. touched on some history there to kind of put Brazil's slave trade history in perspective to America's, right? And like mm-hmm. hundreds of years prior, before like America was still a baby country, probably not even a country at all, like when the slave trade came to Brazil, right? And just kind of putting things in perspective, because I just feel like a lot of times when we talk about American history, it's so isolated and it's also very linear. Like it's just about what happened here in America. Sometimes we don't have the yeah. big picture, and I love to create those pieces and puzzles for the audience, because I just think it's important to put together. It's not necessarily about what we're going to do about it, right? It already happened, but I just think it's a good view and an mm-hmm. aerial view. And it's a good aerial view for me mm-hmm. of what was happening.
And also it's a I'm proud to be Black moment too.
Yeah.
You get an opportunity to see all the attempts of genocide and oppression. I know we try to look at the brighter side of it, but the reality is too that we survived that shit. We are evidence that we survived that shit. Mm. You know, there are people who at that point in time in their chapters stood up, fought, and some, even those who did not make it, you know, because they put their lives on the line, we were able to continue our race. So I just, these stories, these moments, these women leaders, women kings, it kind of goes back to what you were originally saying about women being able to lead. A lot of the conversations we have today, if we would actually take note of our actual history and the mountains that we've always moved as a community, we wouldn't have these conversations, truly. Like, I get people say that we don't need to always revisit the past, and that's kind of a conversation right now. But if we actually did give the past the credit and honor that it deserves, I don't think we would be having some of these conversations today about who can do what, who can't do what, how, when, whatever. Because baby, look, the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah. Patrice is referring to, in part one of this series, I talked about military strategy and women, mm-hmm. and that's not to take away from the men who did their thing in history either. But I just think current day, we have a lot of conversation about what women can't do or shouldn't do or not capable of doing or don't have the ability to do. And I think having the ability to and not wanting to, right? There are women who don't want to lead that I don't think we should assume that means that they're not capable of leading, mm-hmm. right? So there's an interesting and dynamic conversation there to me when it comes to current day and looking back at history. And also, I also referenced how when we were talking about Queen of Sheba, how in many or a lot of African history, there was female leadership. And that may not, and quite frankly, appears most evidently, it was not the norm outside of Africa. Because we were talking about, you got to go back and listen to it, first of all, okay? Yep. But Queen of Sheba, we were talking about Queen of Sheba and how stark and interesting it was, because she's the first female monarch to really be kind of like recorded on record, and how she was a big deal because she ain't shaved her legs. Anyway, you got to go back and listen. That's what I'm going to give you, and you're going to have to go back and listen to
it. Just go back and listen to it.
Go back and listen to it. Why her legs were of issue. So anyway, that's that.
So, but love the series. Love all the learnings. There's more. So we'll probably revisit it in the future. And happy Black History Month.
Yes, happy Black History Month. But don't forget, don't gotta be. Black History Month for us to celebrate our history. So
it's only right.
Yes, definitely happy Black History Month. And we hope you all enjoy, you know, the stories of the Black Women Warriors just as much as you have enjoyed some of our previous Black History Month episodes, because I think it's interesting. So
yes it is. Y'all take care of yourselves. Love on your loved ones. Love on yourselves. And we'll hear from us soon. Next time.
Bye.
Bye.